I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Chasing Justice here in the America Out Loud Radio Network. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and we have a lot to talk about today, as we do all the time. So what's something that's on everybody's mind? Jeffrey Epstein. Okay, so we got the conspiracy theorists out there that someone killed him. Someone powerful wanted him shut up. And therefore, in a federal detention center, they got to him and he was killed. Do you think that's possible? Well, if you listen to some of the theories, obviously there's a potential that something could have happened. I heard somebody on one of the news programs saying that a couple of weeks ago when his neck was injured, he said someone tried to kill him. Now, when we go with the conspiracy theories here, it's very easy to see all of these nefarious people running around doing things. You know, one of the things I find through the course of, especially in law enforcement investigation, is that people who are not involved in law enforcement will always have an opinion about how something could have happened. Like there's these grand conspiracies that you'll get an entire police department to jump onto some crazy activity that everyone's going to swear to. They're all going to, you know, put their careers and their life and everything on the line, and they're going to go through with this this crazy conspiracy. They're all going to attack a certain people or a certain group, and you know, we're all going to be in on it. Well, the reality, as anyone in law enforcement will tell you, is that when two people know something, there's a very good chance you can find out exactly what happened. So this is where the old mobster ruse comes from. If two people know something, one of them got to die, because the only one to give you up then is yourself. So let's look at this Epstein fella. He is facing multiple years in prison. There's no doubt about it. He will probably die in prison. So his motivation, obviously, seems very simple. He knows he's not getting out. They're never going to let him out. They denied his bail. They're going to make an example of this guy. And he knows he's going to end up being in general population at some point in some federal prison. Right now, he's in a horrible jail situation. Here's a guy that owns islands in the Caribbean, that has private jets, has more money than you and I could probably ever imagine, does whatever he wants, whenever he wants, goes where he wants, has every pleasure in the world to him, including his sick pedophilia, which is, that is really what it is. You know, he's got all of that going for himself. He's got rich and famous friends everywhere. You know, look what happened to him last time he was involved with the law down in Florida. Afterwards, he had dinner with several famous left-wing TV personalities, came to his house for dinner to congratulate him for getting off. I have no idea, but here's this guy who's gone from his own private island, his own private paradise, basically, to sitting in a jail cell. People who are pedophiles, who abuse children, they don't do well in jail to begin with. Now, this guy is a high-profile kind of guy, so here he is in jail looking at the prospects of the rest of his life behind those bars, being abused in all different kinds of ways, mentally, physically, etc. He knows he's not getting out. They're never going to let him out. So it's not a decision that any of us can make right now because we're not in his position, but it sounds like that's pretty good motivation to say, well, I had a pretty good run. It ain't going to get better than this. I'll kill myself. Now, we know lots of people commit suicide because they have a health issue, they don't want to deal with it, they have some other kind of mental condition, and suicide seems like the way out. For this guy, I would have to imagine that if we just looked at it without a conspiracy, just as a guy who knows he's never going to get out, he's not 25 years old, that he can look down the road to doing something else. He's got some years on the planet, and he knows, you know, what's he got, another 20 left, and those 20 years are going to be miserable behind bars. He might as well just be done. That's the first way to look at this. The second way is obviously he has information about some very, very famous people, some high-profile individuals who may or may not have engaged in sexual activities with these underage girls. Now, if that comes out, that could ruin people's lives. And I think it's probably on both sides of the aisle. So I think the telltale thing there will be we're hearing outrage from lots of different locations on both sides of the aisles about, you know, this is unbelievable that this happened, that this guy killed himself in jail. It's impossible. It had to be an inside job. You'll see how far they stretch this. The further they stretch it, the more credibility there might be to it. The sooner they let it lie is because maybe really they don't want anything to come out. So we're going to go into some possibilities, what happens in jail and how people could kill themselves. But those are the two real things. So that conspiracy is somebody did it. So now you break that conspiracy down even further. What did he do? Did he have somebody in the jail help him? And how would they have helped him? Well, there's a lot of concern right now that the post-mortem, the autopsy, how come it's not out yet? The physical autopsy takes a couple of hours, you know, with the doctors that are there, the pathologists. It takes a couple of hours to dissect the human body and look for the different injuries that may have caused death. That you can get right away. You know, the proximate cause of death is that he was hung, or he hung himself, or he was stabbed, or whatever. Toxicology, on the other hand, takes often much longer. In most average cases, toxicology can take months before you get that information back. So you might see a high-profile person dies, no obvious signs of trauma, no violence, and then 2 months later we'll hear, hey, guess what? We just found out, you know, why this person died. They had heroin in their system or fentanyl or whatever. So that's not unusual. It sounds unusual because they can't give you the full complete response until they get all of those facts together. Now, could they speed up the toxicology? They could, but it's still going to take time. So I'm not surprised that, you know, he dies one weekend, and by the end of the next week, we still don't have an answer what killed him. Plus, there's an investigation going on, which tells me there's a possibility that somebody may have assisted him. I don't think anybody snuck in there. And I got to tell you, I saw a lot of the memes on social media, and they're hysterical. They have Bill and Hillary Clinton dressed up as prison guards. You know, the last person to visit him was these two unknown prison guards, and it's obviously Bill and Hillary with a mustache and jail guard uniforms on. I think that's pretty funny, actually. But where does that come from? You know, this whole thing, every time somebody is going to testify against the Clintons, all these jokes come out now about, hey, Hillary wants to know, do you want to have a car accident or do you prefer, a shooting for your suicide? So there's that belief out there in, you know, the conspiracy world that the Clintons are involved in a lot of that kind of thing. People that cross their paths end up dead. Now, if you look at the lists, which you can find on the internet, of all the people surrounding the Clintons who have died mysteriously under strange circumstances, it is kind of lengthy. And you have to say to yourself, all right, well, listen, we all know people, right, that end up dying, people that we know in our lives, people we work with. But I'm telling you, when you look at their list, I don't have that many people in my life that could have died, let alone, you know, all these people that are related to them through business or their political world or whatever. So that's all part of what's building on this conspiracy. So the other thing we're going to look at now is if somebody did help him, who are you talking about? You know, we're not having ninja squads of FBI or CIA going in there and killing a guy because they got to keep him silent. That's the stuff of movies. What you might have here is you may have a guy who's got billions of dollars. Well, they say 560 million they know he has, but I'm sure there's more money tucked away in other places. And maybe he says to somebody in that institution, somebody who works there, somebody, a custodian, somebody, anybody that's working in that facility that has access to him, and says, listen, I'm going to have $1 million sent to you through my attorneys if you can make sure nobody comes down the hallway for half an hour, or if you can turn the cameras, or whatever. Whatever is, you can get that inside help. You can solicit that inside help from somebody in the jail, so that you can do what you have to do. And by the time they find you, you're long gone. They can't bring you back. And you don't have to suffer the consequences of your actions. The other more nefarious one is that there was a team of assassins of some kind. that run in there and did something to him specifically to silence him and keep him quiet. This is going to go on and on for a very long time, no matter what the autopsy report says. There's always going to be people that are going to add his name to the Clintons list and the list of all these other famous people. We're never going to find out who else were the pedophiles that were involved with this guy. I think Attorney General Barr came out and he made a good statement today. He said, you know, anybody else who was involved with this guy doing anything criminal, don't breathe a sigh of relief, because there's millions of pages of documents he left behind. There's potentially maybe a journal that he kept track of, videos. You know, you got people coming to your island doing bad stuff. You're probably going to want to video some of it so that you have an ace in the hole. Should anything ever happen to you, you could come forward with that information. Wouldn't that be handy to have a video of some high-profile, important person when you're getting prosecuted to say, hey, now's the time, you better step in and help me or you'll be in the cell next to me. So those are really our choices. We have simple, Occam's razor kind of thing. The simplest answer is usually the truth. The guy was facing a horrendous end of his lifetime, whether it be 5 years, 10 years, or another 30 years, in prison under deplorable conditions when he went from being a billionaire. And he just decided, well, that's it, I'm done, I'd rather be out. And he kills himself. And we'll talk about how he could have done that in a jail cell. That the impossible jail cell to kill yourself. We'll talk about that. And then there's the conspiracies. Either somebody helped him, generally, or somebody went in and killed him. So the news is now going crazy because it's going to take on its political edge. You know, however they can go after Trump with this, that's where you're going to see which way the stories are going to come. You know, because obviously there was those 30-year-old pictures of him when he knew the guy back in the day. And, of course, they want to say, well, you know, obviously the president is in charge of all this stuff and he must have been on that island and he was doing all these bad things because, you know, he's a miscreant. I might go on and on and on with their nonsense, that they're going to use it as some way to smack President Trump. So you'll see those angles of stories coming out. The other side of that is both sides of the aisle have people who are well-placed in their respective parties, and they were engaged in these kind of things. And they don't want that to get out because that would really upset the apple cart. Even if it wasn't them, what if it's high-ranking people in the business world that have lots and lots of money, and they were engaging in this? So you have to say, well, what's the connection to the politicians? Why would they want to help them? Because what do people with lots and lots of money do? They give lots and lots of money to politicians, and money is the mother's milk of politics. So you might want to protect someone who's a big donor or make sure that your campaign is always funded or you have a jet to fly around, whatever. This is where these conspiracies take off. Now, when we look at the jail cell itself, the average person, if you've been in a jail, it's one of two ways you go to a jail. One, you take a tour, some kind of a tour. When you're a kid, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, some other organization, you go through and you help. You're helping people, so you go and you get to go to the mess room or the library and you hand out books or whatever. That's what you see of the jail. And it looks very intimidating. Big high walls, Constantine wire. You have gates that open and close. You can't get. You could never get out of that jail, right? There's cameras all over the place, guards everywhere, or corrections officers, as they should properly be called, because they are law enforcement. And that's your impression of a jail. There's no way things could go on in there. The other way of getting in there is maybe you got locked up. Maybe you had a DWI, maybe you got into a fist fight, maybe you had a problem, maybe you stole something. You got arrested and you had to go sit in jail until your court case came out. So your impression of the jail is going to be different than the average person. The average person doesn't get locked up and the average person doesn't go on tours. All they know is what they see from movies and what they hear all these pundits talking about what a jail is like. I can tell you from my experience as an investigator that the jails are a microcosm of the rest of society. The only difference is everybody in there, other than the corrections officers, are bad guys and bad girls. You know, I call it the toughest precinct in America, because, you know, as a cop on the street, you come across thousands and thousands of people who are just regular people, and sometimes you come across some bad guys and girls. When you work in a correctional institution, everybody in there is a bad guy or a bad girl. So it really is the toughest place to work. Now you look at the jail itself. They do not watch you 24 hours a day like they do in the movies. It's not like there's guards walking up and down, you know, banging the stick on the wall. It's a major institution with lots of people, lots of things going on. These are regular jobs that people have. And people are prone to behave as they would at any job. You know, some people are real go-getters and are really on top of their job. Other people, not so much. And other people shirk their duties sometimes. That's just the reality. That happens to cops, happens to firemen, happens to plumbers, happens to everybody. It's what part of the human condition. So in a jail where you think you're being watched every minute, that somebody's always got an eyeball on you, that's not really true. That's what you see on TV, but that's not really true. And I call your attention to this because we've all heard these stories of people who go to prison who are attacked, people who are sexually assaulted in a jail. Well, if they're being watched every minute, how could that possibly happen? But we all know, anecdotally, everybody says when you go to jail, you know what's going to happen. It's going to be terrible. It's going to be bad, right? Well, how could that possibly happen to you if they're watching you every minute? Because in reality, they're not watching you every minute. You're moving from one place to another. There's corrections officers are tied up doing other things, and they don't see you every minute. So in this guy's particular case, was he on suicide watch? Wasn't he on suicide watch? Well, apparently it's come out that he was on suicide watch several weeks ago, and his attorneys requested that he be removed from suicide watch, that he had calmed down, he was starting to be better. Now, it's also interesting that two of his attorneys have requested their own attorneys. You see, so the plot here thickens. This is probably the third side of the conspiracy. Did he make it clear to his attorneys that he wanted to kill himself and that he wanted them to get him out of a solitary confinement or a medical watch or suicide watch by convincing everybody, hey, we've talked, he's all good now, he's not going to do that. He gets out with the strict purpose of going to a place where he can't be seen so he can kill himself. And then he does. And now these attorneys who helped him get out of that have to answer for why they made that case to get him out of suicide watch when he then killed himself. So obviously they need attorneys because there's going to be an investigation. So all of this goes to the simplest answer. This guy wanted to die. He wanted to do it. He might have paid somebody to look the other way. He might have had the attorneys paid to make a case to get him out of the rooms that he was in so that he could have this opportunity. He might have paid for somebody to, I don't know, drop off something. So we're going to come back in segment two. We're going to talk about that a little bit more because I want to tell you about some suicides that I've had to specifically deal with that involved people that were incarcerated and how you think this can't ever really happen. But it does. I don't think there's a jail in America where someone has not killed themselves if they're of a mind to do it. There's ways to do it. It's easier than people think it is. You know, now they're saying it's impossible. It's not impossible. It's not impossible at all. So we'll be back in a minute with round two on Chasing Justice, and we'll follow this up a little bit more.
Spreading the outlaw truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world. To unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications. America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody, to Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe, and listen, I'd love to hear from you. There are so many people out there in the audience now that are following me on Twitter. I really want to thank all of you for doing that. It's really exciting to hear what you have to say, and it's nice to be able to talk to you. If you want to join and jump in there, it's at Pangaro Global. At Pangaro Global is how you get on the Twitter. Pop on in there and I will follow you back and we can keep track of each other. We can have conversation. It's all part of the Chasing Justice world, and the more people have conversation, the better off we all are, I think. So go take a look at Twitter and you can join us at Pangaro Global. That's fantastic. It would be really nice to have you. So where did we leave off? We were talking about this Epstein fella and his suicide, or his murder, or some other kind of plot. Maybe the aliens got him. You ever think of that? Who knows? So what goes on in a jail? Jails are very secure. When I first became a detective, one of the many cases that you end up investigating as a police officer is frauds, credit card frauds, money frauds, thefts, all kinds of things. I had a bunch of credit card frauds that led me to a large correctional institution in the state of New Jersey here. One of the big ones, you know, one of the big ones everybody knows about. And a bunch of people, regular citizens, had their credit cards corrupted and their accounts were used to buy all kinds of things. Records, clothes, back in the day when they had records, you know, before they had everything they got now was actually records, CDs, clothing, different kind of items that people can get in a jail. Believe it or not, they're allowed to get packages. They get things delivered to the jail. So when I started following this up, I noticed that where the things were shipped, you know, the fraudulently purchased things were shipped to an address in New Jersey. When I looked that up, it was this big prison. So I said, they can't be. Can't be. How do people, what inmate is getting, you know, the full volume of Led Zeppelin delivered, you know, 12 of them delivered to one inmate? So I call the corrections officers and I speak to their investigators and I voice my naivete to this gentleman, who starts laughing and he goes, Detective, let me tell you something. Everything in the world is in this jail that's outside in the outside world. We try and keep up on it as best as we can, but the prisoners are allowed to have things shipped to them. You know, as long as we look at it and it's nothing illegal, it's nothing dangerous, they can have it. I said, okay, well, specifically, I'm looking at 12 complete sets of everything by Led Zeppelin, the rock and roll band. You know, these anthology things with, you know, 12 CDs in it came here. He goes, yeah, we get that kind of stuff all the time. People send music, they send different things. I said, well, could you tell me, you know, where these went? Oh, yeah, they went to inmate Jones or whoever it was. And I said, well, could you guys go search the room and see if you can find them there? Sure, we'll do that for you. Well, he calls me back and he says, yeah, we went down there and searched them. And he said somebody sent him some records and he gave them to the other inmates. You know, he didn't know who sent it to him, but hey, he got some records. He got 12 anthologies of Led Zeppelin. You know, these are $200 a piece or whatever they were at the time. So in reality, he then clues me in. He goes, you got to understand, people will do a credit card fraud like that. They ship him 12 sets of this albums that he then turns around and sells in the jail to the other inmates for all kinds of other things he can't get. Maybe for drugs, maybe for a weapon somebody made for him, something that he needs, cigarettes, something he needs in the jail that he can't get. He now has something to trade with. So somebody on the outside did the fraud, they sent this to him. He says, this happens all the time. He goes, it's not illegal for a guy to get records. So we give them to him and he does whatever he wants with them. So there's a lot of things that go on in jails that would be shocking to you. You know, we talked about before, how do people get attacked in jail if everybody's watching? Well, you're not always watched. You know, it's a big institution. We see a lot of our corrections officers are attacked. You know, we got better cameras now. So we'll see that the inmates will surround a particular officer and attack them. Well, how's that happen? Because they don't have any weapons in there. The corrections officers don't have weapons. They're in there with these very dangerous people, and it's completely different than anything we've experienced. So is it possible that somebody went in and helped this guy, gave him something that he used to kill himself? We'll find that out eventually when the autopsy report comes out. Exactly how did he die? So let's talk about that then. You know, how can somebody kill themselves in jail? Well, we already said he was not in the suicide watch area. He had been removed from that. But you would think such a high-profile prisoner, they'd still be watching him kind of regularly. And this is where the conspiracy theorists come in. Well, he was such a high-profile person. Everybody was watching, so these people had to, you know, this is the conspiracy where they all get together, you know, all 300 corrections officers, and they decide that, you know, for the right amount of money, they're going to do the right thing and get rid of this guy for the politicians that are going to get in trouble. That doesn't happen. You know, is there corruption? Of course there is. We all see it on the news. You know, there's corruption in law enforcement. There's corruption in every part of our society. including in the correctional institutions. There are some people who have engaged in sexual activities with prisoners, who have done other bad things, have brought drugs in or whatever. We know that that happens. So is it possible that in this case that happened? It is. But how would you go about killing yourself when they talk about the room? You know, the room he was in has, there's no bars that you can hang from. There's no, because they try and create the cells so that the prisoners can't hurt themselves. But you can hang yourself actually very easily. All you have to do is cut off the blood supply in your neck to your head consistently over a period of a couple of minutes and you can die. So we know Robin Williams, you know, the comedian, he killed himself by putting a belt around a doorknob, putting it around under his neck, and then putting weight on it. You know, he sagged himself down so that the weight cut the blood off to his neck. You pass out in about 8 to 10 seconds. And then your weight obviously falls even further, which puts more pressure and blocks the blood. It only takes a minute or so for your circulation to stop, that your heart will stop, and you'll be dead. Okay, it's that kind of hanging. It's not the break and neck kind of hanging you see on TV movies. So you can do it kind of easily. If you could take a piece of string and put it on the edge of your bed, you could wedge it between two areas where maybe a desk or your bed might meet, and wedge that string in there, put it around your neck, and then just sit down, and it'll cut off the blood supply. So we don't know exactly how this was done, but that's the possibility. The other one is, you know, if somebody chokes you out with their hands, there's going to be petechial hemorrhaging. It's got little blood vessels in your eyeballs. The whites of your eyes all pop. And you can look at that. Plus, there would be marks on your neck. You could see where somebody was choking. You can't hide those things. That bruising would be there. So we're going to see what the autopsy report says. But you can kill yourself in a jail cell. And you can do it rather quickly. You know, it's not one of these things that takes hours. I heard one person theorize that somebody had to help him, because when it comes right down to it, who's actually going to do that? Well, you know who's going to do that? Somebody who wants to die. You know, if you're not a person who's thinking about suicide, the idea of killing yourself is not something that comes to your mind. You don't think about it. But when you're thinking, this is it, I got to get out of here, you're going to find out a way to do it, and that's an easy way to do it, and you take yourself out. You know, right now there's a terrible phenomenon of teen suicides. These kids find a way to kill themselves. They hang themselves. They do all kinds of things. Police officers in record numbers are killing themselves, you know, from stress and from, you know, the things that they see on the job. It's terrible. But people will find a way to kill themselves. They want to do it. They'll do it. So if this guy wanted to die, he could die in a prison. There's no big mystery there. When I was a cop back in the day, there was a burglary string of car burglaries, of all things. Guys going into cars, stealing change, tokens for the highway, for toll booths, and stereo, whatever they could find in a car that they could resell for money. And a patrol officer was out there and actually caught a guy stealing a bunch of stuff. And he arrests him and brings him in, and then they call me, like 2 o'clock in the morning. Hey, detective, can you come in and talk to this guy? You know, he says he wants to talk to you and tell you about what he did and this and that and the other. Okay. So I drive in. I was probably about 20 minutes from headquarters, you know, 2 a.m. I get up and go. I get there and the officer is briefing me on what happened. You know, how he made the arrest, what the guy said to him at that point. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I see a couple dispatchers and the sergeant running past us, screaming, "He's hanging himself, he's hanging himself, he's hanging himself." Now, how long was he in the cell? Well, the investigation revealed that the officer put him in the cell, did his paperwork, brought it up to the desk. They were watching him on the cameras. The officer went back down to ask him a couple questions just before I got there. He left the cell block area. He came in. He talked to me for maybe 5 minutes or 6 minutes. In that 5 or 6 minutes, that guy made the decision to hang himself. Now, there was no ropes in his cell. He took his shirt, wrapped it around his neck, tied it around the bars, and he hung himself. Now, the rules were you had to, you know, watch on the camera. You had to check somebody every 20 minutes. You know, you can't sit over people. You can't sit over them and watch them like that. They're under arrest. It's part of being in the jails. It's unfortunate that we have that kind of a condition in humanity where people are put in cells, but they are. So we cut this guy down. we started CPR. We got the first aid squad in there, and they worked as hard as they could, and this guy was dead. Simple as that. It was 5 minutes. He was alone, and he decided he was going to take himself out. He made a makeshift way to do it, and he killed himself. So these things can happen. There's not a mystery to it. Anybody who works in corrections will tell you, if somebody wants to do it, they'll find a way to hurt themselves or kill themselves. So this guy, granted, he had a lot of dirt he could dish on a lot of people, and we'll find out in time, hopefully, if it was something more nefarious than he just wanted to kill himself. I think the most likely thing is that his attorneys knew he wanted to do this. They helped him get out of there so he could do it, but I don't know that for a fact. That's just what it seems like, all right? That's what it looks like. Most likely, he just wanted to die, and he did. So that's enough with this guy. You know, all his victims, they wanted justice. They wanted him to go in front of a court and be convicted or have him plead guilty for what they did, and they're never going to get that chance now. Anyone else, though, who was involved in that kind of stuff, Bob Barr, the Attorney General, says he's going to continue the case. He's not stopping it. So if you're involved and you went there, you might want to get yourself an attorney and make a deal ahead of time, and you spill the guts first so that you get your side of the story out, because I think they're coming for you. This is a very high-profile kind of a thing, especially with this death. All right, so we want to talk about that. Back to the world of law enforcement. We are seeing some of the candidates on the Democratic ticket who were trying to become the presidential nominee. We're noticing a couple of them have now gone back to the Ferguson case and are starting to try to reopen the Ferguson case. That this guy, hands up, don't shoot, I'm surrendering, and the officer just decided to murder him for no reason other than he felt like killing somebody. Well, we know this has been looked at. We know that it's been investigated thoroughly. We know that most of that was a lie. This fella they called the Gentle Giant, I won't even mention his name. The officer was investigating a possible robbery he was involved in. We all saw the video of him rob the store owner. You know, oh, it was just a bunch of cigars he took. Doesn't matter. The law doesn't discern whether you forcibly take cigars or whether you forcibly take $1 million. It's a robbery. That is a crime punishable by usually 3 to 5 years in prison in most states. So this officer observes this subject, wants to talk to him. The guy comes over, leans in the car, and tries to grab the cop's gun. Right? In the course of that struggle for the gun, he gets shot. The guy charged at the officer. There was a whole series of events that put the officer in harm's way because of the actions of the criminal, not because of something the officer did. But that has had a lot of ramifications on our country. The fact that these candidates in the Democrat Party are bringing this up again, saying that this young man who died, and it's unfortunate that he died, it's unfortunate anybody dies, especially under those circumstances, but he caused that himself. And now they're bringing this up saying, well, you know, he was murdered. There was this whole conspiracy there. This officer just decided to kill him. How is that kind of a commentary not inciting violence in the rest of our society? You know, Trump gets on the air and says, I think Bill and Hillary might have been in that jail and did something with Epstein. And they lose their minds about how he shouldn't be saying it. But here these candidates are bringing up lies about a very, very terrible situation that caused lots of problems in our country for lots and lots of people, that was proven to be lies, and they're bringing it back up again, and not one person asks them a question. Not one person brings up the evidence to them and says, well, you're not correct about that. Why would you keep bringing that up? So that resulted in what in law enforcement is known as the Ferguson effect. And we've kind of touched on this a couple of times in the past. The Ferguson effect is where officers they're always going to do their job. Cops are always going to do their job because that's who the cops are. The men and women we have in law enforcement, the overwhelming majority of law enforcement officers are always going to do their duty. They are going to act to protect and serve the communities that they are in charge of, that they're responsible for. There's no doubt about it. I've seen it my entire career. But there is an underlining belief now, and I think it's a understandable one in law enforcement, that you be careful exactly what you do, because you're not going to be backed up by your community. You're not going to be backed up by your politicians. You're not going to be backed up by other people if it doesn't go right. Now, I can tell you, having arrested thousands of people myself, not everyone who you want to arrest wants to be arrested, and they will fight with you. And if you've ever watched a violent arrest when someone resists or fights or causes more difficulty, it is an ugly situation to watch. It looks bad. But as I have said over these airways many times, the police are not there to take a beating. The police are not there to get killed before they can do the right thing. The police represent you and me. We put them out there. We demand that they go out and do this job. And we don't say, well, we demand you go do it, but hey, you should take the first punch or you should take the first bullet. That's not how it works. So when our officers are out there and they see this danger happening, they take actions to control the situation so they don't get hurt, and believe it or not, so the person don't get hurt. All right, so we talk a lot of times with one of the guys from the neighborhood here, Jim the Contrarian. Jim always says, well, how come you see the cops always, you know, throwing people on the ground? Why do I got to throw them on the ground? Because on the ground, you can control somebody. When they're standing up, okay, unless they submit to the arrest, put their hands behind their back and submit. If they're starting to resist, the best place for them to be is on the ground, because you can control them on the ground better than you can if they're standing up fighting with you. It's as simple as that. There's no mystery to it. Nobody's trying to hurt anybody. You're better off with the person on the ground. If they don't want to go to the ground, how are you going to get them there? Well, you have to put them down, and they don't want to go down. So you kick their legs out from under them. You pick them up. You drop them on the ground. You land on top of them. It's an ugly-looking process. It's a violent process, but it's a process that is required, because not everyone will go along the way they're supposed to, and it leads to that. So the Ferguson effect is really our officers thinking twice before they take certain actions, before they get involved in certain things. You know, I know for a fact, I've been told by some officers that, hey, you know what, in the past, I would have been really, really aggressive and proactive, and I went out and sought out criminal activity to make good arrests and to do things. But you know what, you do that now, and you arrest the wrong person, or they resist, or you have some problem, you could find yourself out of a job, if not indicted, and become an enemy of the people on the news immediately. So that's the Ferguson effect. That affects you, ladies and gentlemen, because if our cops are out there not aggressively enforcing the law and looking for the criminals amongst us, we are at the mercy of the criminals amongst us. So, ladies and gentlemen in blue, you know, I stand with all of you out there as you do your job. Be safe, my brothers and sisters, and we will be back for round three on Chasing Justice in just a minute.
The question I always get asked is, where do I get the energy from? Well, keeping up with Malcolm Out Loud is no easy task, friends, even for Malcolm. Well, you may know that I've personally been taking Healthy Cell for some time now. Well, the great news is Healthy Cell has a new type of natural supplement called the Nutrition Gel. So no more hard-to-swallow pills. The good-tasting gel can be mixed into smoothies, yogurt, or water. These gels provide maximum absorption of essential nutrients, and it's healthy for our gut, not abrasive like pills can be. You know, it's time for all of us to go pill-free, and you can try it with a free 2-day supply. Just cover $2.95 shipping, and the company Healthy Cell will cover the cost of the product. Go to healthycell.com/outloud, or simply click the Healthy Cell logo at the top of AmericaOutloud.com.
Hello, my friends. Here we are on Chasing Justice. Here's round three. Ding, ding, ding. Ready to go. All right, so there's a lot of other things going on in the world. We see the world of politics going on. We see we see Joe Biden saying some strange things. I didn't follow Joe Biden's career very long. He's from Delaware. I'm not from Delaware. But he's always been a fixture in the Senate. He's been there a very, very long time. But as he's running for president now, what we see is he has made the decision that since the party is, I would think, I know he's a leftist, but even further left than him, and he has no choice but to jump on that bandwagon. So you see him now apologizing for his entire history, which is, I think, kind of BS. He's apologizing to everybody. He's trying to jump on and realign his thoughts and his beliefs to match up to the much more radical Democrat Party of 2019 as it goes into the next election cycle. So this you can hear us on different social media of him. He's out there, you know, and we believe in this, and the Republicans believe in that. He says, we're not going to let facts get in the way of our beliefs or something. I'm paraphrasing that. But he said, we will not let truth be affected by facts. Or we'll believe truth and not facts. Well, the truth is based on facts, isn't it? The truth is based on fact. What does that mean? So somebody, one of the Democrats had said a while ago, and I think it was AOC, or AOC, as my friend Mark Levin likes to call her, is she said it's more about social justice than facts. So sometimes, you know, the facts be damned. We have to do what we think is right, even if the facts don't match up. So that's a dangerous position. The other thing he said, he was telling everybody with the shootings that happened in the last couple of weeks, these mass shootings, active shooter incidents, that he remembers as vice president being at Parkland and doing the right thing, except it was 2 years after he left office. So he's trying real hard to connect with people and become the anti-Trump candidate. And I think a lot of the Democrats do see him as probably the most sane of all of them that are running, even though he's a few beats behind, put it that way. You know, I know a lot of people who are older, even older than he is, who are really very, very sharp, that are 100% on their game. He just doesn't seem to be 100% on his game, regardless of his age. He seems to be, you know, tired. President calls him Sleepy Joe, which is pretty funny. But I think he's past his prime, is my point, and I think this is his last hurrah. And if they make him the candidate, I think he will be defeated probably pretty easily, because he is a gaffe machine. I mean, the guy just makes so many mistakes when he talks. I attribute that to him trying to be genuine and just have a conversation, you know, just talk. He's just a guy talking. Only he gets facts all wrong. He says inappropriate things. He says them in inappropriate ways. And then he's got the groping thing, you know, with all these girls and kids that he's clinging to. It just looks really creepy, you know. So I don't know if he's the answer for them. Kamala Harris, though, Kamala, you know, I want to say her name properly. It's appropriate. I just don't know. I've heard it 52 different ways. She is, I think, a dangerous candidate. She is someone who has radicalized. She used to be a prosecutor. She was a Law and Order prosecutor. She put a lot of people in prison for doing a lot of bad things, which you could say, hey, that's commendable. She did a good job to try and protect us, protect her community. Now she's backing away from that. The fact that lots of her files and her record of her activities as the prosecutor or the attorney general in California are now closed and sealed. Why would you close and seal, though? Wouldn't you be proud of what you did? I mean, she says she's proud of it. Then why would you seal them? Because there's a lot of things in there that's going to go against everything she's talking about now, pretending, you know, who she is now is not who she was then. You know, it's kind of a tough thing that she put so many people in prison under the marijuana laws of California, and then there she is joking about smoking marijuana. You know, it just doesn't look good, and it doesn't feel good, especially to those people who are sitting in prison, to have somebody making that kind of a joke. She is someone, though, that I think we do have to pay attention to, because she's an attractive person. She is very smart. She was a prosecutor, so she can speak. You know, there's no doubt about it. She can take an argument, and she can bring an argument to you. Look what she did to Joe Biden. She caught him off guard, accused him of being a racist and having friends who were racist, and he really couldn't come back from that. He had a hard time, and it kind of set the tone for how he was going to behave. So I would watch out for her. Because I think she's dangerous. She's talking about, you know, when she's going to do a presidential edict, she's going to do all kinds of things. As soon as she takes office, she's going to come after your guns. There's no doubt about it. That's in the offing again now after these shootings. And we talked about that at length in other episodes of Chasing Justice, as well as on Viewpoint with Malcolm Out Loud, when I was privileged to be on that show. We talked about, you know, these shootings and what's going to happen with guns. I think something's going to happen, because there's so much pressure now that people feel, the politicians feel, they have to do something. They have to come up with something to say, see, look what I did. Now, I think they would probably take the smallest little crumb as long as it's something. They can say they did it, and then they can, you know, stand on the shoulders of that and say they did something to, fight this violence. But a point that I made, and I'm very happy I made this point, I wrote an article that was on the AmericaOutloud.com website. You can go back there and look at the articles. Things I talked about was all the killings that take place every day in our big major cities, Chicago, New York, Baltimore. Those seem to be the big ones everyone talks about. All those killings that go on, every weekend, there's 40 and 50 people shot in Chicago. 40 and 50 people shot, and there's between 3 and 15 or 20 people every weekend killed. Now, when you add that up times 52, that's 1,000 people, okay? 500 to 1,000 people. We have these mass shootings, and each one is horrific and terrible. And we want to do everything we can to stop the next one. But we don't stop the next Chicago shooting. This weekend's coming up. When the weekend gets here, there's people going to be dead by Monday. Are we doing anything about that? We're not doing anything about that. It's a pretend. It's a big pretend game. That's all we really do anymore is we pretend. The politicians talk, spin the words so they look like they're doing something, and nothing really gets done. Those people in Baltimore and Chicago that are not going to be alive come next Monday, they deserve every opportunity to live their lives out to the fullest, to be what they want to be, love their families, be together, enjoy life. And by Monday, a lot of them are going to be dead because of what goes on there, because the politicians do nothing to stop it. So could they stop that? Of course they could. There's ways to do it. They won't do it. Instead, they're going to jump up and down and scream about taking your guns away. People who would not ever commit a crime. People who would never commit a mass shooting. We have to find other ways to attack this active shooter problem. And one of the ways I've posited out there is that we have to do some type of ability to identify people who were potentially violent and do something. Now, this brings up the red flag laws. And I was on, you know, the show with Malcolm, Malcolm Out Loud, Voice of a Nation. We've talked about it on Viewpoint. Is these red flag laws, when you see someone has said or done something that throws up a red flag, that they're dangerous, we should be able to do something other than just take a police report and wait till they kill 20 people. But this is really a slippery slope, because it depends on who's in charge, doesn't it really? I mean, what if they all decided, hey, the Trump people, you know, the deplorables out there, all you deplorables that voted for the president, you're actually really dangerous. You incite this stuff. You're all racists and everything. So you really shouldn't have a gun. And the minute you have an argument with your neighbor about anything, the dog, taking a dump in the backyard there, somebody's going to say you're violent, you screamed and hollered, and we should come and take your guns. Now, that sounds like an overshoot. It's really not. What happens is these things are on a slippery slope, and it starts out for a good reason. This is what we're going to do, and then they're used and they're abused down the road. So I had a conversation with a wonderful young man who's just absolutely brilliant. He's a thinker, my son Jack. He really is a smart kid. And he says to me that if he looks at the history of giving government power, he is very concerned about these red flag laws, because he says while they may save some people, the vast majority of these laws will be abused. He says all you got to do is get one left-wing judge who decides he or she is against anybody having guns, and every person that comes to them with a complaint will say, you know what, confiscate their guns, they're dangerous. Confiscate their guns, they're dangerous. Now, does that seem possible? Maybe at the moment it seems highly unlikely, but we know from the history of giving government power, it will be abused. So I have to say, thank young Jack for his thinking. You know, I'm in favor of doing something to identify and intervening before these people shoot. I've created programs for schools, how to identify these students so that we can intervene, not to lock them away, but to get to them before they commit violence. And you could save their lives too. But Jack's point is right. You know, we're going to come up with something in a knee-jerk reaction to these horrific events, and we're going to have to live with the consequences of it for a very long time. You know, look at people, how they felt after 9/11, and we came up with the Patriot Act. And that was put together quickly, as law goes. It was sweeping, because we saw this terrible threat now in front of us, and we had just been hit in the mouth very hard. Lots of our fellow citizens were murdered going to work. And we said, we have to do something. And we gave the government the sweeping powers of the Patriot Act. And ever since then, as that event fades further and further back into history, and we forget the horror of that morning, now we see people chipping away at the Patriot Act, because it's too much power for the government to have. We just saw in this Mueller investigation, we were seeing examples of the government using these tools we've given them against citizens. So Jack's not far off the point. I think he's actually on the point. So I'm going to say, well, we have to come up with something. It's my point of view now. We need to slow down a little bit. And yes, we do need to do things. There's lots of things we could do. But I don't know that jumping into legislation that makes it easier to take away someone's rights is really the right thing to do. And I say that knowing that me or anybody in my family could be the victim of a mass shooting. And then people would stand up and say, oh, see, if you had just done that, look, we would have. Well, that's true. Look at it this way, though. You're talking about several hundred people who were killed in these mass shootings. Each one is a beautiful human being who didn't deserve to die. But if our medicine for that affects the rest of the country who's not involved in those things in a negative way, is it worth doing that? Is it worth going on that slippery slope to undo the rights of so many other people for the loss, this tragic loss of a couple hundred people? And I say that, I feel cavalier when I say it, and I, please do not take it that way. But we have to be able to talk about these things openly. So if we look at another example, there are about 35,000 automobile deaths every year. Each and every year, 35,000 automobile deaths. Innocent people, women, children, men, killed, slaughtered on the highways because of drunk drivers, bad drivers, inappropriate drivers, sometimes their own actions. Wouldn't it follow the logic that we got to get rid of cars? 50,000 people a year are killed. That's a pretty big number. 35,000 to 50,000 people are killed in automobiles. If we want to save every single person, we should ban automobiles. But we don't, because that would affect all the rest of us who are not involved in those accidents, causing those accidents or killing people. And we are all susceptible to being killed in a car accident, right? But here we have a couple of hundred people, and we're ready to knee-jerk and take away the rights of everyone else in the country. So we do need to take a deep breath. We need to slow down. These things are horrific. And we have to make some progress on them. But the way to do it is not to remove people's rights as a knee-jerk reaction. So thank you, Jack Taig, out there for thinking. That's actually really, really a good point. So I'm interested, you know, maybe you want to throw me a Twitter what you think about that. Is that something we should do? Should we do these red flag laws as quickly as we can, put them into place, and then hope that the judges who make the determination of whether or not your gun should be taken away will be doing it at the right way? Should it be two judges from two different jurisdictions so that you're not getting one local judge who just has a bias one way or the other? You know, the same thing could happen. You could have a judge who's biased the other way that absolutely not, I'm not taking anybody's guns. And you give him a case of a very dangerous person who's got lots of weapons and said some horrible things. And he says, I'm not taking them. And then he goes and kills your family or 20 other people. That would be, I think, just as bad as not doing anything. See, these are big questions. These are big thoughts. Things we need to think of rationally and not through the eyes of politics. What is expedient for me to jump up and down and scream, see what I'm doing? I'm going to save the world. I'm going to take away half the weapons in the world, and you're going to like me because I did that. So this is kind of where we are at this particular point in our country. So I want to go through the couple more things I have here because, you know, time goes so fast here on Chasing Justice that I want to make sure I cover this. Recently, a court decision has come out that says, illegal aliens that come to this country have got to be self-sufficient if they want to apply for citizenship or benefits. Even legal aliens who have come here have got to prove that you know, they're not using or they have not used in the past inappropriately the social network, social welfare network. Right. So now they're saying it's going to make it harder for someone to apply and to be granted citizenship if they've gone on social spending programs, if they've had welfare, if they've used food stamps, if they've abused any of the programs we have to help people. And I can already see people jumping up and down. You're going after the food of children who need that food. No, that's not. That might be a consequence of this, and that's some we can deal with that. We can't be diverted from the essence of what needs to be done because there is a bad result. We can figure a way to make sure that the illegal kids who are going to be affected get to eat. We don't want anyone not to eat, all right? But at the same time, if you're here illegal, and you're using the social welfare system as opposed to coming here and having a sponsor, coming here and being self-sufficient, whether you came here legally or illegally, you should be self-sufficient. This is not a great big money pot for everyone to just show up and take from the people who are earning the money, the taxpayers, just because they get here and it's better than where they came from. Right? I'm not cold-hearted. You know what I'm like. I believe we need people to come here. We need immigration, but it has to be legal. And we have to have a need for the people that are coming here. What do they offer the country? And it can't be just that, well, they don't like it where they are, and we have a lot of stuff that they can get, and as soon as they get here, we're going to give them all this stuff. That's not how a nation will succeed. That's how a nation will fail, and then it will fail for all of us. So we need to be compassionate. We need to be understanding. We need to look at these cases quickly. When somebody comes and claims that they're here for a legitimate reason. If they're here for a legitimate reason, open a door and let them in. If it's not legitimate, they should be sent away right away so that they don't, first of all, become dependent on our system and they don't bleed our system. Because I don't know about you, but I work pretty hard. I take care of my family. We do a lot for charity around here in this house because it's the right thing to do. But we can't save the entire world. And it's not right for people to come here just to take. They have to come here to bring so that we all benefit. All right, so that's my little bit of a sermon at the end of round three on Chasing Justice. Remember, go hit us on Twitter. It's at Pangaro Global. We'd like to hear from you. And you can also email me here at the station. It's jpangaro@americaoutloud.com. I'd love to hear from everybody. I like your emails and I like your tweets. So until we meet again, my friends, remember, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. Makes the world better for everybody. See you next time.